Hi everyone, my name is Dawn, and I am an adult child of alcoholics and dysfunctional parents, both. So first I want to thank George for asking me three times, and the third time I said no promptly, the first two. And you know, of course, halfway through this month, I was pretty sure that I should have said no the third time. to the point that I almost texted or called and said, you know, I really think I made a big mistake saying yes. She got me at a weak moment, which is God's way, I'm pretty sure. So the reason I didn't feel qualified to pitch at ACA, and I kind of knew these were going to do this. It's one thing if I was standing and waving my arms around, but being seated is another matter. So I don't want them to get in my way. So bottom line is I was, I haven't worked the steps in this program. And so if I think back to my roots in recovery programs, when I was very new in my first fellowship, and actually I never really had a first fellowship. I got court mandated to 12-step recovery in 1981, and I've been involved ever since, which is miraculous for any of you who know how well that kind of intervention often works. So I was meant to be here, and I went to, I promptly needed three or four programs. And my sponsor, I went to three, and my sponsor was involved in four. And so when I got 30 days in one of my programs, my sponsor said, well, that I would be driving her to Ojai, and I would be the 10-minute speaker at this other fellowship, and because she was the main speaker, and I looked at her like she was freaking, had rhinoceros, you know, a horn. And I said, what are you talking about? I have nothing to share. And she said, for the person who has 10 days, you have a lot to share. You have everything to share. And first of all, I didn't say no to her. And second of all, I've come to find out this is true. So I don't know why I don't remember that. It's just like I don't remember that prayer works, or that, you know, if I just write the steps out, you know, if you've ever written an inventory and then given it away and gone through 6 and 7 and gone through 8 and 9, and it's amazing. Like, it works. Like, but I'm not wired like that. I'm like, drag me across the pavement, bloody and, you know, beaten, and I'll just get up and bandage myself and do it again, because I'm tough. And because I now know, having come here, and I came here about a year and a half ago, that that I was trained to be a good foot soldier in the army of denial and in the army of stick-to-itiveness and taking it, you know, just a level of tolerance for a certain type of pain that is not human. Neither was it humane, nor was it intentional, nor is it human. So when I got here, I was, I had a lot of good years. I immersed myself in the program when I first got into it, and I was beaten up enough that even though I was sort of a, you know, sort of a quick study, I was beaten up enough, and I didn't actually work program or steps at all in the beginning, long back then either, but I picked up enough. I put down the chemical part of my life, and my very first drug of choice was food. And it was just enough to keep you away from me. You know, it was enough. And it worked really well. But that came up big and strong when I put these other things down. And so anyway, there were two things that happened for me that got me a sponsor. The first time was I could not shut my head off. I couldn't stop eating, and I couldn't shut my head up, and I was going crazy. And so I asked someone to help me, and at the time I was so powerless that I would have done whatever, you know, whatever she recommended. And she recommended some really crazy things. Some of you drove from far away, and thank you all for being here. And thank you, God, for having... I like this better. This is nice. Small and intimate and seated. But I wound up... I kind of lost my train of thought. Some of you have driven from the west end of... or the east end, I guess, of Ventura County. And I was asked to go to a meeting a day of a couple of fellowships. And in one case, back then, there wasn't a meeting a day of the other fellowship. And I drove to Thousand, I was also doing a bunch of court stuff. And I drove every Tuesday to Thousand Oaks to do what my sponsor said. That was one of the many things I did. That was not possible for me. So fast forward to ACA time, to getting here about a year and a half ago, which was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, after being and I said this out loud yesterday, I had really been on the front lines for my family, what I thought was fighting the good fight. I was well armored, I had a defense mechanism set up from long ago, and I was my family's main source of support. I was injured delivering our second child, and both my ex, who is here and who, well, I'll just thank Steve now for bringing me here, for making me come here, for dragging me almost bodily after many gentle suggestions. He just friggin' poured me into the car with Dennis and said, "You, down in the back, you know, you need this program and a lot of therapy." Okay, thanks. He was right. He's right. At any rate, I had been fighting, you know, what I thought was to keep my family afloat, and it was, everything was out here, you know, it was all, and I had gotten so messed up. And I now know ACA has helped me see that I actually didn't even know what I was fighting. I thought that this was what the problem was, and that the tigers were out the door, and maybe some in me, but now I know that I was not even fighting the right battle. I neither had the right tools, nor did I need any armor whatsoever, quite the reverse. But what happened was, a couple years back, as the kids grew up and moved along, and the trauma sort of mitigated itself, and there were periods of really extreme trauma over the last 15, 20 years. Not Serbia, you know. I mean, not certain kinds of trauma, but trauma for a white Jewish Valley girl like me, you know. It was trauma, big trauma. And, my reference point, you know, sometimes people complain about the weather in Santa Barbara, and it's not really ever very bad. Well, except when bodies are floating down, you know, Sycamore Canyon, or the hillsides are, and homes are burning. But other than that, at any rate, I had succumbed to this sense of, like, now I know it was depression. And sheer, the beginning of a sheer mental collapse, mental, physical, and emotional collapse, spiritual collapse. But about 3 or so years ago, I just kind of took my room. I picked up a few really dangerous distractions. If any of you have managed to stay away from playing games or obsessively doing things on your phone or on your computer, just stay away. Trust me. Not good. I never did any of that stuff, but then I was watching mindless television, staying up all sorts of hours in the middle of the night with over 30 years of sobriety, working a full-time job, managing this very stressful set of circumstances, undermining myself at every turn, playing computer games, not talking to people, going to very few meetings, and gradually, like, I wouldn't answer your phone call, even though, you know, but sometimes I would be doing this when I had to pee, and that would be, you know, it was like, and knowing I needed to go to sleep. I mean, I am not in my 20s, so going to bed at 3 a.m. and going to work when you're in a powerful sort of, you know, where you need your faculty kind of, and this was very, I was literally supposedly sober. And this got progressively worse. And the other thing that was happening is that so what I was telling myself, the disease in motion, which I now see as God's gift, because I would not have gotten here had it not gotten really bad, and had not every single thing, and much of this has happened since I've been in ACA. I mean, I've literally required a psychiatrist and had to like stop working and had a full mental, what for me was a full mental collapse. It's most people literally wind up in a sanitarium. I still go to work, part-time. I go to work part-time. As my sponsor said, you're having a nervous breakdown. This is what a nervous breakdown looks like for you. It looks different for other people, and now you will make a phone call. And that was, 6 months ago. So, but I would be in my room in my pajamas sometimes, for the weekend. Not my style, really. And I used to be sort of vivacious and lively, and I wanted to get up and do things. And I also suffered an injury when my daughter was born, she is now 20 and a half almost, and it was a lower spinal cord injury in the delivery room, and it has left me with a pretty serious foot drop and 24-hour day nerve pain. When I was praying during the reading, because for some reason my foot really hurts right now, it's hurting right this minute, and most people who know me well sometimes remember this, but I have people who've known me for 25, 30 years, and they want to know why I'm limping, and what's the matter, or why am I icing my foot, or what. So I constantly have been dealing with that for a long time as well. So I kind of said, okay, it's your turn to like hang back. You don't have to do as much. You can break down. And so the problem with all that is like when I wound up in my room, is that then I couldn't get out. Now it's not that I wasn't going out at all. It's just that I didn't feel good. The other thing that was happening is because of my behavior, and partially because things were really changing at work, a place where I had always shined, or had shined for a decade and a half, was unraveling. And it was emotion, it was financial, but many people like would see the signs of this in their life and they would go, oh, time for me to either get a new job or readjust my behavior and attitude. Nope, not me. Bam. Let me just beat him over the head a little bit more to get him to see it my way. That's not how big bureaucracies work. And I had a lot of freedom and power in my job. Power is the wrong word. I was able to make decisions, and they were collaborative, but they were largely, I was out in front on my issue for my department, and I was, even if I made a mistake, they backed me. But what started to happen is this happened less and less, and they started to undermine me and do things that made me even crazier. Like I was already beginning to be paranoid, and then they were making me more paranoid. And one thing I am is I'm pretty pragmatic and I have big vision. These are things I know about myself. Even when I'm crazy, I can still usually see the big picture fairly well. I may not be able to get myself out of the box, but I can see the box, all four sides in the sky, and I'm great at giving advice. It's just not for me. Not good for me. You want to know what's going on, call me. I'm good. I can listen and dial it right in. So then I started to realize that I was kind of in trouble, but I couldn't be out of trouble. And then I was hopeless. And in a bunch of despair. And that's sort of how I showed up to you. Of course, I thought you guys were crazy. Oh, also, let me start with, I'd been told I needed Al-Anon forever. And I'll give you a few things. I don't know what time I started, but I got to get, at least you need to know a little of my family history. So my dad was the alcoholic. My mother stayed. I learned things like you stay no matter what. I thought I had a perfect loving, perfect maybe not, but I actually felt loved. My parents were together until the day my dad died, and he died very young. And I did not know there was anything wrong. I have two brothers and sisters. I mean, a brother and a sister. There's three of us. We're within 3 years of each other. We moved to California when I was five. I never saw my dad drunk. Never. I saw evidence of his drinking, and he drank daily, and I believe he was bipolar. He drank, I believe, to break even. My mother cried on their first date. She locked herself in the bathroom. Well, when she met his family, she and they're all normal. There wasn't a lot of alcoholism in my family. My this loud voice I have in the debate club that I belong to, it's genetic, and it's both genetic, passed down culturally by the rabbis do this, but wasn't the religion. It was just the Morantz family's like this. That's my maiden name. And my after dinner at my dad's house, they started to argue, like they were having a debate, which was nothing to them. My mother's family never raised her voice above a whisper. And she wound up going to the bathroom, locking herself in the bathroom, and crying. Now, most people don't go on a second date, because that is terrorizing. She did this on her honeymoon as well. So, yes. So, they were together for 35 years. That tells you something. My dad ran away when he was... he lived in Winnipeg, and he and his friends ran away from home like at 15. And my aunt told me this story. She's was 17. She had just been allowed to watch him, you know, like babysit for the weekend. And he wrote a note like on Thursday, have gone to California. Like they hopped a plane and or a train or something and went, him and his friends, at 15. So you know, he was a little bit of a wild one, to say the least. But we moved to California and it was great. And my brother and I and sister and I lived in one room. And here's what we were close. My dad's brother moved also. So I had two cousins and his two best friends moved their families to LA too. So we had this nuclear sort of deal, you know, was what it was. I didn't know anything other than that. But I remember when I was 7, I was in Indian Maidens, and I was so excited. We're not exactly a camping type family. My mother didn't even swim, ever. She never learned to swim. We lived in California, and we had our own swimming pool eventually. But we were going camping, and I was really excited, and I remember it was like to be that weekend, and on Tuesday, my dad's like, well, do you want to go? How would you like to go to New York? No, I was 9. Nope. Yeah, 9. And I said, that sounds like fun. We were moved by the weekend, which is a geographic, I now know. So these are the kinds of things that were happening. And they didn't happen all the time, but cyclically, the way my life was. I also didn't know I was frayed. I know most of this from inventory. And the way I know this is that I had this bunny rabbit. It was like one of those like rabbit's foot kind of fabric, real bunny skin bunny, laid on its side. It was Mrs. Beasley. It was white. And I used to hold this sucker, this poor rabbit, and I used to pet its fur probably, you know, mercilessly. If it could have talked, it would have screamed. And I have it in a Ziploc, in a box and it should be in a display case, like, evidence of fear realized, you know. It has no skin. I mean, I wore the poor bunny's fur off. So at any rate, I was afraid, but I was also really shy and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, to the best of my knowledge, I had a good childhood. I loved school because I knew the rules. So let me get to what I've learned in ACA. So, and like I said, I had allowed myself to like wallow in this little place and think it was my turn. And then it got really bad. And so I came to ACA, and I came to like two or three. Oh, and I had been told to go to Al-Anon. And I thought it was okay, but it was kind of dull and dreary and not, you know, I don't know. I thought AA was more fun. So I stuck there. And I kind of thought I could work my steps, you know. And I also, by the way, Claudia Black's book came out the year I got sober. Herbin Gravitz and Bowden were here in town, and I mean, I kind of was going to school in this area, and I just thought I handled this stuff. So it was really shocking to me that I hadn't dealt with my parental issues. Denial. I have it. I didn't know that I disassociated. But I can't, when I came, I was kind of like, I was already in bad shape. And then I started to pay attention. So I went to two or three meetings here, and then I like took a break. Because you were, it was, there was, I mean, there was a lot of people talking about rape and incest, and people were crying constantly at meetings, and they were, talk about a downer. But I didn't care. I was going to five meetings a week. I was just like, you say I need this? Okay. So you kept saying, you're in recovery, you're in recovery. Keep going. You're doing good. You know, and Dennis didn't drive, and he was going to meetings. I'd drive him to meetings. I was just like doing the deal, whatever. Okay, my sponsor was going, my AA sponsor, you're going where? What? You know, and the gal, you know, and then all I was doing was getting worse and worse because I was now starting to cry. I don't cry. I don't feel my feelings. I don't do any of that. I already lost both my parents and everything. Didn't cry at their funerals. So, but I started to identify. I identified with all of the laundry list traits except the authority one, and that's because I took on authority. Because my dad was an authority figure, I was the oldest child, and I protected my entire family from my father. So I was definitely taught that I wasn't good enough, that although I was the apple of my family's eye, especially my father's, I just could never amount to anything, and not to trust myself, and not to feel. And but I was, you know, we learned to worship, for sure, false gods, you know, money, property, and prestige. And if you know anything about recovery, for me, what I've learned is looking good is the antithesis of the program, if you're me. If you're like me, I mean, it's nice if you don't go out in, you know, with mascara streaming down your face, but if you have to, you can do that. I've learned how to come to a meeting with bawling, with no makeup on, and, you know, and be just fine. Absolutely fine. I don't care. I don't care at all. And what I started to do was identify with people, and people who I wouldn't have given the time of day or related to or liked, I was giving hugs to and going, oh, and I would listen to them so intently, like I could. And even though my life was so not like theirs, I was identifying. And then what happened was I started to see how not only had I been, and the other thing is I can't remember my childhood at all, like at all still. And then I realized what a perpetrator I had been and how much I had done this to my own children, especially my daughter, who was going through this very difficult time and who I had been enabling repeatedly over and over, and how bad it was getting, and the triangulation that was going on in my life, and then my job falling apart worse and worse and worse and worse. So it hasn't been a bed of roses since I got here at all. I've had some dark times, and I have actually had to sort of hang in there. And I didn't, when I first came also, the first few people that I would have asked to sponsor me, like to work the steps with, one of them was dating my ex-husband. The other two were either being sponsored by that person, that woman, or in a co-sponsorship relationship with that woman, so that wasn't going to work. And then, you know, then the rest of them were, you know, just either not available, didn't come to all the meetings, or, you know, whatever. And then I was ambivalent. And busy, and trying to stay out of mental ward and still provide for my family. I'm now at a point where I've done some of this work. I haven't done the steps, but I haven't been going to as many meetings. But I, because of circumstance, and God has been very demonstrative with me. And I tried to think of this word the other day in a meeting, and I finally thought of it. It's called a boom. I was saying, you know, like if the signs aren't painted clearly, God delivers a boom with, you know, with like a roller on it. Boom! Right upside the head, you know, six or seven times if I don't get it the first time. Usually, at some point, usually I pay attention. And I've had I've been able to start to be have some boundaries. I didn't realize I didn't have any. I've been able to say no and to ask for what I want in two or three sentences and then have no expectation that I'll get it. And sometimes, believe me, I'm a scorekeeper from way back when. And you should know what I want well in advance. And if you don't, God damn you. You are going to suffer. You are suffering big. And the other thing that happened in my family, both in my family of origin and in my family of choice, the family I have a house with, not this family of choice, and you're my family. I've grown up in 12-step programs. I found a God in 12-step programs and a faith that works under all circumstances. But I'm often told that I'm the crazy one, even when I'm not. And that buying that sort of complete lie and not having enough courage to just quietly, just like I said, walk away or sit quietly, and then has been very, very difficult. But now, and it's really recent that I've just been saying, no, you know, no, nope, that's just not my truth. Thank you. But I get upset sometimes, and now I realize that it'll pass. I pray about it. I'll call someone. I write about it a little bit. And mainly, I just wait for my anxiety and anger to pass, and I'm able to accept reality a lot better for what it is and not expect an onion to be a grapefruit. You know, I just kept going to onion expecting it to be fragrant like a rose. And, you know, and then of course when you live with people who are inconsistent, sometimes they're rosy. And sometimes they're like Limburger cheese. And I just kept thinking I was going to get a rose this time. And that if I did it this way or said it that way or try. I also didn't realize quite how ridiculously controlling I was at all. And I now get that these things that I learned how to do were just, well, I knew that they were to save my life. That part I got. But now I get that there's a life that's much quieter that I can have that doesn't have to be populated by intolerable things, behaviors, attitudes, and people, places, and things that are not at least neutral, if not beneficial, that I don't have to fall on the sword and say, thank you for hurting me again. Yes, of course, I deserve to be hurt. And let me go out and bake you a cake. Now, while I'm bandaging my own wounds, you know? I mean, I was never allowed to cry. And it's funny, I've picked people who, still to this day, when I cry, it's almost never that people will listen to me. I get taught lessons, I get told to shut up, and stuff. So I found in recovery that when I did first start crying a lot around here and realizing I had feelings and that I was messed up, I remember I was completely unable to think and feel, which is tough when you're anxious all the time and sort of depressed and feeling hopeless and you have to go to work and make decisions. I also was really mixed up. And so the last couple of weeks I've had clarity and calmness and surrender, and it's only been a couple of weeks, and I don't really particularly think I've done anything super different except that I've started to draw some boundaries and I've been practicing some new behaviors. They're part of them are just about taking care of myself, and that's the other thing. People have been saying this self-care thing, you know, like just be good to yourself, and I'd be like, you know, I always thought I kind of did. And if you look at me, you would think, oh, she kind of looks like she's doing that. But I had no, I would only do it for your approval. I would never just do it to do it. And then I was just mad at myself because I couldn't do it. And now it's kind of like, it's becoming a little more natural. It's the easy does it, but do it. And the I'll end with a couple of things. I'm not as frightened anymore. I haven't felt like I need to. I had felt like that I didn't really have much to contribute. I had lost all my confidence in almost every area. Part of that was just getting older, but part of that was all these other things. And I really didn't have reason to get up in the morning. And I knew that was really sad. And I know intrinsically that I have good qualities. I mean, I get that, but I didn't feel it at all. And I've been feeling a lot less of that. The other thing is that I have been thinking of you more often. I have been given the grace of not having that gripping self-centered fear and self-centeredness. I mean, I have been thinking about others, calling others, texting others, caring about others, doing things for others for this last couple of weeks, not in an out there way, just in a, and that to me is an indication that God is working in my life and that I have hope for future. And I really think that ACA is the ticket. I do think I'm gonna have to work that yellow workbook. I'm pretty sure that the steps are the key to setting me free. And I'm really grateful to ACA for allowing me to come with my bad attitude, my judgment, my self-righteousness, and really, like I said, I just feel like in some ways I don't belong here, even though I know I'm a child of alcoholism, because I don't remember all the abuse, and I've been a perpetrator. But guess what? If I qualify with 13 or 14, I don't think you can take my seat away. Thank you.
Thank you.